Dalton steps up. Picked off at the 40-yard line. Isaiah Simmons. Simmons down the sideline. Simmons inbounds. Simmons all the way.
Simmons for president. Simmons is going to run in 4 years. What? It was all Simmons. All about all Simmons. Way. Simmons all the way. Pick six from the Olathe, Kansas native. Not bad. Two pick sixes last night for the Cardinals. That's pretty good offense when your defense scores twice. So Thursday Night Football actually had some points. A lot of points to make up for those horrendous offensive performances the previous 2 weeks. It helps when you get the Broncos off of Thursday Night Football.
Absolutely.
Yes. A little more entertaining game last night as the Cardinals pick up a win over the Saints. 42-34 was the final, and the Cardinals are now 3-4 on the season, and they're right there in the thick of things in the NFC West. They're half game out of first, and the Saints dropped to 2-5 with the loss. And DeAndre Hopkins, many fantasy people happy to have him play. 10 catches, 103 yards, two pick sixes in the game in the first half, and the Cardinals on their way to winning. We'll preview the NFL games coming up this weekend. Of course, the Chiefs will be taking on the 49ers, and there's a new running back that has been acquired by the 49ers. We'll tell you who that is. I highly doubt he's going to probably play much on Sunday, but you never know, and that would cause some maybe issues for the Chiefs as they prepare for that game. And there are a couple big games in Big 12. KU on the road at Baylor, and the big showdown is K-State and TCU battling for supremacy in the Big 12. The MIAA has games, top 25 games, go through the Big 12 games as well. Major League Baseball playoffs, the Astros up 2-0 on the Yankees, and the Phillies-Padres game 3 today. And we were told by a little birdie that this was coming down the pike, and it did come down the pike yesterday, that Wichita State baseball head coach Eric Wedge is stepping away from his coaching duties. So we'll address that as well. But we're going to start with a lot of high school sports. We begin with high school football, but then we are going to go in chronological order. So we'll go volleyball and we'll go cross country. So we'll roll right through this here. We got a lot to cover. It's week 8 of high school football season, Dusty, and we've got some big games on the radio tonight, and looking forward to all of the action. Hope our listeners are looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, we'll get things started as we always do with the Football Express, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 540 on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, as we preview all the area league matchups. And then we'll have pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock, Katy Country 94, Rock Hills at Washington County, and on Z96 through the lake, Lakeside is hosting Pike Valley. Online video stream tonight at ncksports.com starts at 6:45, Beloit at TMP on the Beloit Trojan Channel, and we'll conclude the game night coverage with a local high school football scoreboard show at 10:05, presented by State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne. The other games in our immediate area tonight, in 8-man Division 1 District 5, Lincoln is hosting El Saline. The winner will host a first-round game in the playoffs next week. Also, in 8-man Division 2, District 4, St. John's Tipton is hosting Wakefield. And a non-district game, Osborne at home against Fairfield. So those are the games that are going on. They're also 8-man Division 2, District 6, Thunder Ridge hosting Wallace County for the district title. And in a non-district game, Sylvan Lucas is at home against Logan Palco. So that's a look at the schedule for tonight. You can always check out the rest of the schedule, ncksports.com. And again, we will preview all of the games here tonight on the Football Express, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable. So catch all that action, Katy Country 94, Z96.3, and ncksports.com here this evening.
All right, so tonight let's start with the big game that we picked up for our schedule, Rock Hills at Washington County. Dusty's been saying the Grizzlies have been improving this year. They're headed in the right direction, and they have an opportunity, to, believe it or not, to make it to the playoffs against a Washington County team that only has 15 on their roster from what we saw. Jason Broadfoot's got the call from Washington, Kansas, and we're just doing the W trip, Wakefield, Washington. What W town were we going to send to Waubonsie next week? Where are we sending him to?
If it's East, then you probably will.
Waverly. That's six-man football. Yeah. We'll go there.
We almost had a chance to go to Waverly last year, maybe, but went to Lebo instead.
White City.
I mean, Wichita's right there.
Oh, yeah, there's Wichita. Yeah, that starts with a W. White City's another small town. Yeah, I'm just thinking all the W towns. But you get to go to Washington, as it's Washington County against Rock Hills. And the winner, this is the playoffs. It starts a week earlier, doesn't it?
It does. And both coaches kind of mentioned that a little bit, and Washington County is going to count on their seniors a little bit. Rock Hills are going to count on the improvement they made throughout the season, and see if they can't sneak one more meaningful game into their season, at least.
You win, you move on to the playoffs. You lose, you're done. So the playoffs do start a week early. Here's Otis Hendricks, head coach of Rock Hills, on the message he has for his team going into tonight's very important game.
Here we are, guys. You know, this is what it boils down to. You know, how bad do you want it? And are we going to be courageous enough to face the challenge of going out and grabbing something that we haven't had in a long time? I think the kids have been very responsive this week. They work really well. Very excited about the opportunity.
And Jason, you had a chance to talk both coaches. Washington County's head coach on the motivation for his team. Clearly a playoff berth right there in front of his team as well.
The message, I think, since last Friday has been that, you know, we're only guaranteed two more weeks, and it's up to us to figure out if we want to play beyond those 2 weeks. And that all starts with this Friday, beating Rock Hills and getting in the playoffs. You know, if we don't, then we're just kind of stuck with one more week after that. So that's kind of the big motivating factor is how much more do we want to keep on playing?
That's a good point because, you know, even if you don't make the playoffs, you do have one more game, but it doesn't mean anything. You really don't get too excited about it other than it probably benefits younger teams to get the reps, the experienced teams. Like if you're a senior and your goal is to make the playoffs and you're out, it's like, oh, really? Let's just move on to basketball, wrestling, whatever the case may be. So that's a good point that the Washington County coach mentions there. But this is pretty exciting. How you see it shaping up there, Jason? You've talked to both coaches this week.
Both these teams are pretty similar in the way they go about things offensively and defensively. So it's just going to be about which teams can get the ball in the red zone and finish those drives. And it's about which team doesn't make the big mistake, such as fumbling the football or turning the ball over. It's going to be a hard-fought game. I think both teams are going to move it between the 20s pretty well with the running game, but you know, who gets the touchdowns in the red zone, who gets the two-point conversions could come down to decide who gets to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, and a lot of times it comes down to eight-man's considered offensive football, but a lot of times it comes down to what team can actually get a stop or two. And that's, you know, we can see what happens tonight. It'll be 6:30 with the pregame kickoff at 7 right here on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Washington County hosting Rock Hills. The winner moves on to the playoffs. The loser has a game that doesn't even count towards the playoffs coming up next week. Dusty, you've talked about Rock Hills and how they have improved and what a jolt it would be in the arm if they could make it to the playoffs.
Absolutely. And it doesn't even really matter, I don't think, what happens in that playoff game when they get there. Right. I mean, they're going to be taking on a number one seed from another district. Mm-hmm. They know they're going to be an underdog in that playoff game. But if you can get to that point and say, hey, you know, we went 3-5 here, 2-3 in the district. We made improvements as the season went on. And you know, right there till the end with a Lincoln team that's fighting tonight for a home game in the playoffs, mm-hmm. right? And so they've definitely made those stretches of improvement as the season's gone on, and it is a very young team, and virtually everybody's going to be back for them next year. That means a lot for them moving forward, right? And so this is just something that, like you said, it is a shot in the arm. It's a thing that you can take and move into the off season with and understand, hey, we made it this far, and now we can make these improvements and get even further to this next year and continue to build and grow this program the way we want to do it. And I think we need to commend Otis Hendricks because I think his record shows that he's got a lot of losses, right? But it doesn't show the teams that he takes over and the work that he puts in. He took this team over in August.
I was going to say it was a late start for him.
And so he's got them on the verge of a playoff berth, and they're believing in what they're doing there and putting things together. So I would personally like to commend Otis Hendricks anyway for the job that he's done with this group as well, because it's not easy taking them over like that when the coach leaves in the middle of the summer like that, and then you've got to, you know, put in different things that you believe in, or maybe that they didn't do the same way, and so now you've got to move on and do something different. So you know, Rock Hill is in a great position right now to continue to grow that program.
Yeah, and imagine if they could have a full year, you know, next summer and spring or whatever they need to do to work on their games from that standpoint, have some stability there. That'd be helpful. Rock Hills, Washington County tonight. Winner goes to the playoffs. Loser will have a meaningless game coming up next week in regards to not being in the playoffs, and we'll have it tonight, 6:30 pregame on KD Country 94 on KD Country 94.com. Jason was a little bit concerned when we said, you need to go to Washington, he thought he had to book a charter flight or something. And we're like, no, dude, it's north central / northeast Kansas up on Highway 36.
Not the nation's capital or the
neither
Pacific
one.
Northwest.
Neither one. No D.C. after it and no Seattle in the state. So, all right. Yeah. Which, by the way, I would just say this the other day to my oldest. You know, I'm a Kraken fan, even though I don't know how they're doing right now. But I like the colors and this and this and their logo, the new hockey team that was joined last year. And I said it'd be fun to go to Seattle sometime. You know, you're just a direct flight, I think, out of Wichita. You can go to Seattle, and you could go to, like, maybe a Seahawk game on a Sunday, a Kraken game on a Saturday night. I said that just the other day, and then it came across Twitter, and there was a Seattle blogger that put out there, well, we're so proud of this ranking. Seattle has the worst air quality in the entire world. So perhaps I will not be chartering a flight. Well, not chartering. I fly commercial. Highland's the one that's got the charter flight. I will not be going to Seattle anytime soon until air quality improves, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Pacific Northwest, just so unpredictable. Yes. Of you go there and you're going to get rained on probably half the time.
I know.
I went to Portland in
Portland.
2009. It was like I got there, it was sunny. Mm-hmm. 3 days I was there actually doing things, it was raining. Mm-hmm. And then I was stuck in the airport and it was sunny again all day.
Well, yeah, when you're in the airport.
Like, yeah. Had a layover and it was, just got stuck there. And I'm like, I could have been outside enjoying this. And so I don't think Seattle's much different than that.
I was lucky when I went to Portland. I was there for a few days and it actually, the weather was pretty nice. And I kind of like Portland. I had no problem with it. But my oldest said, hey, we could do the Space Needle, you know, up there in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I don't know if we'll see a whole bunch of smog or what, but you're talking about air quality. So, no, we're going to send Jason to Washington County for Washington versus Rock Hills tonight. On Z96.3, the Lake, Todd and Dusty will be in Downs. This is a very important playoff game, or not playoff game, but it's a great opportunity for Lakeside and Pike Valley to avoid the number one team in the state in 8-man, and that is the defending state champion, Axtell Eagles. You don't want to have to make that road trip all the way to Axtell. They are so, so good. And if you could play a Frankfurt or a Hanover, which obviously Hanover is down this year compared to previous years, that'd be a lot better matchup. And Drew Dusky, head coach of Lakeside, well aware of that.
If you don't know or don't pay attention to football, you know, if we lose, you know, we're going to play the number one team in the state. And they won state last year, and they didn't lose any starters from last year. So, you know, if you can avoid that, I think that's something that we definitely want to do.
Absolutely. I mean, Lakeside's going to go to the playoffs, but they don't want to go to Axtell. Mm-hmm. Nice town. I've been there. But you really don't want to go there. Definitely not in the first round. You'd rather win, and you got a road trip anyway, but it'd be to Frankfurt or Hanover. So, and those would be technically closer trips as well, not quite as far to travel to Axtell. That's Drew Dusky's take on it all. Pike Valley Lakeside tonight on Z96.3 Lakewood, pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 from Downs. Dusty, what do you think on this one?
You know, if you look at some of the comparative scores, you'd think Pike Valley has the edge here, but I've seen this matchup a lot, and I've seen Pike Valley quite a bit over the last few years, that you can't look at those scores, I don't think, comparatively, and say that this is how the game's going to go. I think both teams are dealing with some injuries that they don't have guys where they thought they were going to be at this point of the season, so that's another factor in this. I'm looking at it as a 50-50 game right mm-hmm. now. Like I think if one team can make a play here or there, like we always talk about in 8-man football, 2-point conversions, mm-hmm. and then turnovers, obviously, and special teams are always going to be key in these kind of games. And if somebody can get off for a good punt return for a touchdown or kick return, whatever, and then, you know, force some turnovers, it could change the game either way. I don't look at this game as like somebody has a major advantage in this one tonight. So looking for a good one and a close one. And obviously, you know, Lakeside's going to need their key players to step up and have a big game tonight.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Jeremy Miller, head coach of Pike Valley. Ian Crescine was recently Athlete of the Week this week. NCKSports.com, read all about that, and he certainly is well aware of Crescine and what he brings to the table.
We all know it. The kids all know it. We got to stop Crescine. I mean, he's our offense. He's probably, in my opinion, one of the better running backs in this part of the state. You know, runs the ball hard. I mean, he's reliable. He doesn't get hurt. He's just a great running back.
He's had a good season. He has been the workhorse, and you know they're going to have to ride him, no doubt, the rest of the way if you're Lakeside. But can you stop him? You know, and we see that with a lot of really good players over the years. Yeah, you know that, but can you stop him?
You see swarm defenses like Osborne has that can get into the backfield before he gets going, mm-hmm. and they were able to kind of bottle him in. Thunder Ridge was able to. St. John's Tipton wasn't. I mean, he ran for 174 yards against them. They lost by 30, but he still had 174. And you know, even good teams are having having issues kind of bottling him up. But if you have the physical defense like Thunder Ridge or the fast defense like Osborne, mm-hmm. that can even get to the quarterback before Ian even gets the ball, right?
Right.
And then it becomes an issue for Lakeside. But he's had an outstanding season. He's right at 1,000 yards going into tonight. And it is. It's easier said than done a lot of times with a kid like that. And he's learned that he doesn't have to bulldoze over everybody, as Coach Dusky was talking about this mm-hmm. week in our locker room chats. Like, he can actually, if there's a guy coming, you don't have to run him over. You can actually sidestep him and get more yards, and that's what he's been doing lately.
Pike Valley at Lakeside tonight, 6:30 on Z96.3 Lake, with pregame and kickoff at 7. We'll have a live video stream, Beloit at TMP tonight from Fort Hays State University. That's where TMP plays their games. And the Trojans are on a roll since losing their first two games of the season to two teams who are undefeated who are going to meet each other tonight. Ellsworth at Southeast Saline for a district title, two of the top five teams in the state in 2A, according to the rankings. And Beloit lost week one to Ellsworth, and then they lost week two to Southeast. And since then, they've been rolling. They won five in a row. They destroyed Concordia last week, 42-0. And this is a trait of Brad Gober's teams at Beloit, and it's a really good trait. And some people may be really greedy, of course. Well, why do we always start off slow? Yeah, but would you rather start out fast and then go at the end, or would you rather go at the beginning and then go, "Wow, man, we've hit our stride, and what do you know, Beloit's in the state semifinals and the finals again." That's what Beloit has done under Brad Gober, and part of that is not that Beloit's played poorly to start the year. Usually it's because their best teams they play are at the beginning mm-hmm. of the schedule. There's been a few times Concordia has been good early in the schedule. Southeast is always early on the schedule. They've been good for a while. And then this year, nobody saw Ellsworth going 7-0. We thought they'd be better, but we didn't think they'd be 7-0, and Beloit had to play in week one, and I think if they played again, I think Beloit would have a great chance of beating Ellsworth. I'm not saying they would, but I think they'd have a much better chance than having played week one with a lot of new kids and new spots and a new quarterback, whereas Ellsworth had most of their kids coming back. So Beloit's been rolling, man, the last five games. They've taken care of the competition. They've handled things very well. They've actually gotten healthier during the season, getting some kids back that they missed early in the year. And they're doing what they've done the last few years, and that is hitting their stride at the right time. And you look at Beloit right now, they go into TMP. First of all, this is kind of an odd situation because, one, TMP's eliminated. They got nothing to play for except senior night and pride, is what Jay Harris told me this week, the head coach of TMP. They've been a disappointment. I mean, there's no way to hide it. Offensively, they just can't score. They've scored three touchdowns the last four games. They had a game where they had negative 26 yards of offense against Scott City. They've thrown 21 passes and only completed five for 100 yards and no touchdown passes. And you thought Beloit didn't throw the ball, which is crazy because they've got a guy that's been getting all-state recognition. He's all-league quarterback in the Mid-Continent League, Cade Harris, who's now not even playing quarterback. They got eight starters back on offense. They got six on defense. It's not like the cupboard, everybody disappeared, but they lost a couple of key guys in the passing game. And the next thing, and they averaged 225 pounds on the offensive line. It's stupefying to me that TMP has struggled so much based on what you see on paper, but they have. And does that make them a dangerous team tonight? Yes and no. One, I don't know how motivated they're going to be because their season's over, but you do have to worry about, you know, is there going to be a cheap shot? Is there going to be some weird play? Are they going to play their guys and Beloit's going to, you know, when's Beloit going to pull their starters or their key players, obviously, because they don't have anything to play for here. They've wrapped up the district. They have a home field game in the first round of the playoffs next week. So TMP really doesn't have a lot to play for other than pride. Beloit's just trying to keep the winning streak going, continue that momentum. But at the same time, if they get up by a healthy amount, I would guess Arismith and Seifert, you know, key players are going to be out, which makes sense. Kind of like last week, fourth quarter, those guys came out in a big win over Concordia. So, Brad Gober on the keys to playing TMP tonight.
One of the things that we've got to really do is we've got to stop the run game. You know, they're going to be a team that wants to run the ball right at us. And then on offense, you know, we've got to be able to control their defensive line. They got a couple of good-sized kids at the front. You know, they're going to move around their front a little bit, and they'll probably slant and blitz a lot. And so for us, we've got to be kind of in tune on, you know, what exactly they're trying to do up front against us and use our rules.
Last time Beloit went to Hays at Fort Hays State University, played TMP. They destroyed TMP, who had the glossy 7-1 record. Beloit was 2-6 and beat them 55-14. And I kind of felt like that's what was going to happen because TMP hadn't played anybody in district that year, and Beloit did, and Beloit destroyed them. And so this will be an interesting matchup tonight between Beloit and TMP. TMP's offense this year makes Beloit look like they run the run and shoot spread when you look at the stats, which is amazing. Beloit's only completed, what, seven passes? and they have 247 yards of pass offense, but four touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to tell you is tonight this game might be over at 9 because neither team's going to throw it very much. And TMP's running out a freshman at quarterback. They originally had a senior at quarterback, but Harris was moved to running back, and they had an injury in the backfield, so now they got a freshman the last few games. And they have really struggled on offense with the freshman quarterback. One, you don't have to respect the pass. He didn't even throw a pass against Norton last week. However, TMP did give Norton a good game, 20-14 last week. So you got to be a little bit leery and ready to go. And if you're TMP, you play loose and have a good time with it, have some fun, and let the chips fall where they may. And you treat that as a playoff game tonight if you really have some pride in what you do, because you're not going to playoffs. And for Beloit, it's keep doing what you've been doing. And don't fall off. So should be very interesting. Beloit at TMP tonight, 6:45 with the pregame. Our live video stream at nckssports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. You went through the whole schedule, correct?
Yes.
The football. It's all there for you at nckssports.com. Busy weekend. Got football tonight. Coming up tomorrow, Substate Volleyball will begin in Class 3A with the Beloit Lady Trojans. They made it to state 5 of the last 7 seasons, and they are the favorite to make it to state for a 6th time in 8 years. They're the number one seed with a 31-5 record, ranked 4th in the state in Class 3A, and they'll face number 8 seed Riley County, who's just 6-29. That's the first match for Beloit tomorrow at Minneapolis at 2 o'clock. And Minneapolis Substate has TMP, the 2 seed. They're 28-7. Ellsworth, the 3 seed, at 21-13. Marysville's a 4 seed at 18-14. Concordia, the 5 seed, at 18-16. And that's 5 teams with winning records. And it's interesting, Beloit's going to play Riley County in the first round just like they did last year at Russell. Same exact matchup in the first round. I will tell you, this is interesting because I know, Dustin, I've been talking about this. We've been talking about how Smith Center's got a great chance to make state. St. John's Tipton's got a great chance to make state. And Beloit's got a great chance to make state. When you first saw the bracket come, or the assignments come out for substate, like, oh, okay, Smoky Valley's not in Beloit's substate, so that'll make it a little bit easier. Now, Beloit beat Smoky Valley in 3 sets, but Smoky Valley's really, really good. Lost a great player last year, graduation, still very good. And in Hillsborough State 2A, which we kind of figured, so forth and so on, but Hillsborough is a team that beat Beloit. Beloit has 5 losses. 4 of them are to state ranked teams currently. 1-5A, 1-4A. Of course, they lost to Smith Center once, beat Smith Center twice, and Smith Center's ranked 3rd in 2A. More on Smith Center coming up. But the more and more I look at this, there's a little bit of concern. And one thing I will say is Brandy Paul's teams, kind of like Coach Gober's teams, is that when the pressure has been on, Brandy Paul's teams find a way to get it done at Substate. They really, really do. I remember the Hoisington match in Hoisington where they were, I mean, they were dead for rights done in the semis. Everybody's talking about late TMP in the finals. And she called a timeout, and she made a change. She put somebody in that you were like, wow, she hadn't really played this tournament. And it was a great move. And Beloit took off, and they came back and won in 3 and went all the way to be state runner-up, losing Royal Valley in the championship match. And I've seen Beloit do this last year. There was talk about, oh, Beloit TMP, that should be a great match. That's probably going 3. And Beloit beat them fairly easily in the championship match and played great at Russell and didn't drop a set. But I will say the Marysville-Concordia matchup, the 4-5, is intriguing because Marysville and Concordia played 3 times, and Marysville's beat them 2 out of 3. One went 3 sets. Beloit plays the winner if they beat Riley County, which they should. They will play the winner of Marysville-Concordia in the semifinals, and that's a dangerous match. Beloit hasn't played Marysville. Marysville's played some good competition. So has Beloit. Beloit beat Concordia 25-20, 25-23 in the Concordia tournament earlier this year in pool play. That was a tight match. And Beloit does have a few younger players in some key spots compared to last year. They do, but they're so loaded and so talented. Only one senior on the team. Everybody will be back next year other than that senior. And then you look ahead to the other half of the bracket. If Beloit makes it to the final, you know, you like your match against Ellsworth. You've beaten them. You know that, so forth and so on. But Phillipsburg is a team that Beloit's had a couple of great battles with over the last few years. Substate championship at Phillipsburg 1 year, and Beloit rallied and was facing a match point and won and went to state. Phillipsburg is denied on their home court. A couple years ago at state, Phillipsburg pushed Beloit right there and could easily have won that match, and Beloit won it, I believe, in 3, and or maybe it was 2, but the second set, Phillipsburg should have won it, and Beloit came back, whatever. And Phillipsburg has Heather Schimper back, who missed basically the whole volleyball season last year, and she's a stud. And so when you have a star player, and obviously Beloit has a couple, Miley Brown and Addie Budke, but you have a very talented player like Heather Schimper of Phillipsburg, and they played good competition, and they took Smith Center to 3 in the Mid-Continent League tournament here this past
weekend. They beat them the week before that.
Right, and they got a win over Smith Center, and they took Goodland to 3. I believe. And Goodland is a team that is ranked in the top 10, and they're very, very good. And Manitou State Volleyball a year ago. So for Beloit, I think when you first saw it, you're like, well, there's nobody ranked in the sub-state except Beloit. Well, now Phillipsburg's ranked number 10 in 3A. This is not as easy of a path as maybe you would have thought when the assignments initially came out. Now, there are other sub-states that, I mean, listen, Nemaha Central's number one team in the state in 3A, and they got a very tough sub-state. And it happens. Silver Lake, there's a tough sub-state, Silver Lake. It happens every year. Everybody complains about it. It will always happen, like a passage in time, that you're going to have three or four really great, good teams, great teams in one bracket somewhere geographically, whatever I'm trying to say. And you might have another sub-state where there's only three teams with winning records. That happens from time to time. And you can complain about it until the cows come home. And I understand it, and I don't like it either. But as one coach that has been a victim of this told me, a coach that's been a victim of this has told me, we still have the opportunity to beat them. We're not eliminated because of some committee says we're not good enough, which he's alluding to a college football playoff. Mm-hmm. So you can complain about, oh my gosh, we've got three of the top five teams in the state in the same sub-state. The great thing is, you got to go out and prove it, and you got to beat them at some point, whether it's sub-state or state. Now, I agree. I would rather see the best teams at state. Don't get me wrong. But we do have an extended playoff. Scott Drew's been talking about advancing the NCAA tournament to 128 teams. I don't want that. But in the state of Kansas and most states, you play it all the way out. I mean, everybody starts the season. Everybody has a chance to make the playoffs in every single sport. Okay, basketball, volleyball, every team qualifies for sub-state or when we had regionals. Mm-hmm. Everybody, and that's the start of the state tournament. Here's what people don't understand. The state tournament really begins as soon as the regular season ends. It begins with the first match in regionals. It begins the first match at sub-state. It's an extension of the state tournament. You're playing your way in to be one of the final eight, to be at a neutral site mm-hmm. somewhere else. But you get to play your way in if you win, no matter who you play, no matter how good the other team is, you still have the chance to go out and do it. Now, I remember Beloit Scott City boys basketball game, top two teams of state, sub-state finals, Beloit hosted it. Would you rather play Scott City and Hutch in a neutral court, or would you rather have them on your home floor at sub-state a little earlier, but it'd be on your home floor? Some people would say, well, I'd rather play some at state. Others would say, well, I'll take home court and take my chances. Beloit lost by 1 point. Mm-hmm. Okay, people complain about it afterwards. Well, Beloit had every opportunity to win that game. That could have gone either way. And Scott City had to play on the road. Yeah. So Beloit did have a bit of advantage. And unfortunately for them, Scott City won that game. And that was the best game, obviously, because Scott City rolled at the state tournament, won every game by double digits, I think. But the point is, Beloit still had their opportunity to beat Scott City. It wasn't the state title game, which is what you would have preferred, but you still had a chance to beat them. Beloit was not excluded because Scott City was automatically placed in the state title game and automatically won the sub-state, and Beloit wasn't allowed to compete. That's what happens in college football playoff. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is look at last year. Cincinnati, if one thing didn't, the Big 12 championship game, if Oklahoma State doesn't lose to Baylor, Cincinnati probably doesn't even get in. Is that fair? They earned it. There's lots of teams that earned the chance to play for a championship, and some committee with a whole bunch of people, and some didn't even play football, are deciding whether you're good enough. At least, you know, listen, I know Keisha makes mistakes. Don't get me wrong. I'm not defending Keisha. All I'm saying is you get to play it out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to you. Would you like to play the toughest teams at state instead of the sub-state final? Absolutely. But guess what? At some point, you're going to have to, if you want to win a state title, you're going to beat these teams anyway, somewhere, somehow. So yeah. I understand the argument and the complaint. I get it. I know cross country last year, 16 of the top 20 runners were in the same regional, which is ridiculous. That's ridiculous. 16 of the top 20. Can you imagine? Six of the top 10 teams in the rankings in volleyball or basketball in the same sub-state. And it can happen. It can actually happen because of geography and where they place. And travel is overrated now. Teams aren't going to forfeit. Schools aren't going to forfeit. Parents may complain about driving 3 hours for a sub-state game, but they'll still do it. And so that's where Keisha can just fix it. Say, forget the travel. The schools will pay for the gas and the fuel to get there. They're not going to forfeit. And let's go ahead and seed this thing by records. And if there's long road trips, so be it. It's not as big a deal as people have made it out to be as it was in the past. Plus, with schools closing down, consolidations and mergers and everything else, we have less teams to the west. And so you're going to have teams that are going to be in the same sub-state have to travel 2 or 3 hours. That's just a fact of life. You know, I love when people complain immediately about, well, that team's an hour and a half away or 3 hours away. How in the hell are they in the same sub-state? Well, start doing the math. How many schools are in that portion of the state? You've got to pull somebody from the east to come west.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy to complain until your dreams come true. But if you actually take the time to look at it, how would you do it? Like, actually take the time. I mean, I will defend Keisha from this standpoint. It's not easy to put it all together.
No.
Now, there are ways to do it better, no doubt. We've seen proposals out there that aren't that complicated that could make it better. But no system's going to be perfect. No system's going to be perfect. So you can punch your ticket to state no matter how hard your sub-state is, because you get the chance to play no matter what. Whether you're an 8 seed and you've struggled, you're a 4 seed and have been missing a key player because of an injury and she comes back in volleyball or he comes back in basketball or football, whatever it may be, you've got a chance to get hot and make a run. Look at the Philadelphia Phillies. They've gotten hot. They're in the NLCS. We've seen some teams get hot in high school basketball and make it all the way to the final. There was a team in, what was it, 5A last year, had a losing record going to sub-state, beat two or three really good teams, and went to state. They earned it. They deserve it. Now, are those teams with great records complaining about playing a team that got hot? Why did we have to play the team that got hot right here at the end? That's not fair. We played 11-12 team, and they're better than their record. We can complain and complain and complain and complain. Nobody's going to be happy. So, Brandy Paul, on the keys to getting state for Beloit.
We got to play our game, plain and simple. Don't make silly errors and hit the ball. I mean, I've always said that. We need to stay in system or stay as much as a system we can. And even when we're out of system, we still got to hit the ball and attack the ball. I feel our defense is great with our back row. They're playing very well. So I think they'll give us a chance that no matter what, we can get that ball set up. And we got to continue to hit the ball and just take it to them.
I mean, Beloit's super talented. They are the favorite here, but it won't be easy, and it shouldn't be easy. It shouldn't be easy to roll through sub-state to get the state. You should have to earn a state berth, and Beloit's done it 5 of the last 7 seasons. And I think it's going to be fun, and we're going to have the live video stream of Beloit volleyball. We'll also have a stream of Marysville Concordia in the quarterfinals as well. So we're looking forward to streaming all of that tomorrow, ncksports.com via Beloit Trojan Channel. Dusty, in Class 2A, the Smith Center Lady Red, the defending state champions, number 2 seed in the Trigo sub-state. Things have gone very well when Smith Center goes to Waukenie, even in the days when Dusty and I were there and they smoked us in football. Not bitter about it at all. I think we were lucky to score. The Lady Red are the favorites to reach the finals against Ellenwood. Ellenwood only has 3 losses, one of those to Beloit. Smith Center doesn't have a lot of losses either. A couple of those are Beloit, but they'd also beat Beloit in the finals at Concordia Invitational. So there's a common opponent to point to. And so everybody's looking ahead and saying Smith Center, Ellenwood in the final. Coach Lynn says, hey, this sub-state, it's fairly deep.
This sub-state this year around is going to be tougher probably than what we've seen in the past, but because Hodges has got a much better team, and Ellenwood's our sub-state, and they're much like us. You know, what they have on their team resembles what we have, and certainly their record's really, really good. And so it's going to be a tough challenge for us, and hopefully we'll be ready to play.
Nick Lynn closing in on 1,000 wins in his career at volleyball. He's got state title in volleyball, state title in basketball. Nick Lynn is a tremendous coach. I have the utmost respect for Coach Lynn and what he's done in all these years and dealing with different types of parents over the years and dealing with different kids, obviously. And I mean different. It's just generation. Kids are different. And it is amazing what he's been able to do. And not only just continue to coach, but he's not just continuing to coach and they're mediocre. They're always right there. And here we are. I mean, they lost talent. They lost players playing college volleyball from last year's team. And here we are talking about, I think they got a really good chance to go back and defend their state title. And when after they last year, I was thinking, Smith Center is probably not going to make state next year because they lose. I saw it in basketball. And don't underestimate them in basketball either. Don't, because Coach Lynn is coaching them. And now, you know, it does look like Ellenwood and they are on a collision course for the final. But he mentioned there's other teams that can bite you, and this is a little deeper than some sub-states, where Smith Center pretty much could cruise to the final.
Yeah, they're gonna have to work for it here this weekend. There's no question about that. And getting that number one seed probably would have helped them a little bit more as well. Kind of it helps you get in a different matchup in that second round that might be more conducive to you being a little more relaxed and rested going into the championship match. But it is what it is. They're going to move forward with what they've got. And again, it is two teams here that – that probably should make it to the championship in Ellenwood and Smith Center. But I know Coach Lynn, like you said, he's going to be a little bit concerned about Hoxie there because they know each other and, mm-hmm. and things like that. And those are always matches where if you're facing a team that's at least good and knows how to play the game, they can catch you on any given day. So that'll be interesting to see how they can go about that. And they're going to be on a different court, being the number two seed, than they have been in the past, yeah. right? And so you kind of like to be on the same court all day, and that won't be the case for the first two matches, because then they would have to move for the championship if they make it that far. So it's just different things that I know Coach Lynn gets a little more nervous than we do about things, and, yeah. and he's always he is always nervous no matter how good his team is going into any match.
But he respects every opponent.
Absolutely.
And that's probably
does.
One of the keys yeah. to why he's been so good,
yeah,
too, and keeping his team focused. So, you know, Beloit's a favorite in their substate. Smith Center would be the co-favorite with Ellenwood. Mm-hmm. And then in 1A Division I at Quinter, Lakeside is going to try to be a little bit of a Cinderella. Their record's nice after losing so much talent from last year when they went to state. 20-12 this year. They're third seed out there at Quinter. And, you know, I will say that when you start to have success, and Lakeside certainly last couple of years had success and then made that run to state last year, that experience helps you when you get the next year when you go to a substate situation mm-hmm. like this. And yeah, you might not have the firepower you had a year ago, but you can maybe take some of that experience and help you in the substate. And Lakeside, a team that's trying to, you know, come out of that substate and go back to state as a three seed.
Yeah, and two players, very important players for this team, and Lauren Brummett and Kylie Bergman that have been there too, right? And mm-hmm. and they're very good players. And can help lead this team. And so they're definitely going to rely on them and lean on them this weekend. It's going to be a tough sub-state. There's no question about that, with St. Francis and Victoria ahead of them. But they've got an opportunity here to, you know, if they play at times like they did last Saturday at MPL, they'll be all right. But they didn't come out real good. They were a little sluggish to start. And so they're definitely going to have that focus right away when they get going here on Saturday.
The team that probably has the highest percentage, if you're putting odds on it, to make it to state is not Beloit. It's not Smith Center. It's not Lakeside. It's Sylvan Lucas. Sylvan Lucas Lady Mustangs, 34-2, number one seed at the 1A Division I at Clifton Clyde, have a first round bye. Many people expect them to go to state.
Yeah, and they'll run into some good teams there at that substate, though, despite their records. Mm-hmm. Clifton Clyde and Washington County, I believe, is the other team there. They're definitely going to challenge Sylvan Lucas. And that's one of the things that you talked about, I think, and I know Brandy Paul talks about it, I know Nick Lynn talks about, is our schedule sets us up really well mm-hmm. for the postseason. And that's not the case a lot of times with the Northern Plains mm-hmm. League. I'm not trying to be rude or anything.
Right.
We just know what they are, right?
Right.
And the Northern Plains League was a little bit down after probably the top four or five this year. And you know, it's not always easy to go into a substate where you're taking on a Washington County team that's been playing Hanover, Centralia, and all these teams all year. We see it all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be the biggest thing for Sylvan Lucas, is understand how good you actually are. And they're very, very good. And if they can do that and play the way they've played all season, they'll make it to state. But they do have to keep that focus for the entire day, because it's going to be tougher than what those records on that bracket are going to show you.
Absolutely. Another team in our area that has a good chance to make it the state tournament would be the St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jays. They are in 1A Division II, and they get a host of substate. They and Thunder Ridge have first-round byes. By the way, the full brackets for substate volleyball posted at ncksports.com. And this one, it seems pretty clear-cut, but who knows? It should be the Blue Jays versus the Longhorns for a berth at state. That's what it looks like they're on a collision course, and of course they're familiar with one another.
Yeah, and St. John's Tipton has one of the biggest home court advantages you can have, because they know how low their ceiling is going into the matches. I don't know how many times I go to the substate at St. John's and the coaches just complain about how low the ceiling is. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, they know on that side that what they need to do and make sure that mm-hmm. they're not hitting the ceiling and things like that. It is a very big home court advantage for them from that. It mm-hmm. sounds funny for me to say that,
yeah.
but it's legit a good home court advantage for them. But Thunder Ridge has played there. They understand what that is too, and they're, you know, starting to get a little bit more healthy here as the season's gone on. Thunder Ridge is definitely a team to be reckoned with at that substate as well. But, yeah, it's St. John's, Tipton, and Thunder Ridge are the favorites there for sure.
And they played – one of them went three sets when they played earlier this year, correct?
Yeah, and Thunder Ridge beat them the first time, mm-hmm. and then St. John's, Tipton cruised the second time, but Thunder Ridge wasn't even close to full power strength in that match.
Mm-hmm. That should be interesting.
It'll be interesting to see how that one comes out.
Beloit would go to Hutch if they make it. Smith Center would go to Dodge City. Lakeside, if they make it, go to Dodge City. Sylvan Lucas would be Dodge City. And then either Thunder Ridge or St. John's Tipton would go to Emporia. And we hope to have teams to cover for state volleyball. Not updates, full play-by-play coming up next Friday and Saturday. That's at least what we're hoping for. And we'll know coming up tomorrow night if we have volleyball to cover at state competitions. All right. And also, we just touched about football and volleyball, but don't forget about cross country. Regional cross country, Beloit makes that short trip to the Mountain Time Zone, to Goodland. Class 3A, Beloit's going all the way out to Goodland. But that's probably a good thing for Beloit, because I was talking to Lance Lundeen's mom yesterday, and she goes, I go, oh, have fun with that trip to Goodland. She says, we're happy to make that trip to Goodland, because now they're not stuck with the 16 of the best 20 runners in cross country last year in 3A, all at, I think they're at Southeast last year. Mm-hmm. So they get to go to Goodland. So they don't mind that trip. And as I call him Stretch, I've coached Lance since he was in second grade, first grade, or whatever, and call him Stretch. And he got that nickname because he could stretch at first base in baseball. And Lance, man, he's the prototypical perfect cross country runner, you know, a little tall, lanky, and just in great shape. And there's probably not an ounce of fat on that kid. And I'm jealous. But Lance is a two-time top 15 placer at state, 11th last year, hoping to get back this season. Brad Mason, head coach of the Beloit cross country team, he likes Lance's chances as well.
A nice opportunity to get out there. It's a course that that we've never run, but it's a course, a fairly flat course that Lance likes those. Nothing like a Concordia or a Ellsworth that we've seen in the past, but looks like it's going to be pretty fast. The weather looks like it's going to be very conducive for some fast times. So I'm looking at a really good race for Lance.
I have to admit, I'm right there with Stretch. I like those flat surfaces to run on as well. You know, I run so often, but, you know, I just don't like the hills. Who does like hills? Actually, there are kids that are just stronger and right. better at going up the hills, or it takes a little less out of them, and that's part of cross country, the elevations, the slopes, or whatever. A lot of people don't know that.
Coach took my joke there, out to Goodland. That would be a flat, you know, it's flat out there, so a flat course. So.
Are you saying what? Western Kansas is flat?
I'm saying Western Kansas is flat.
Yeah, Goodland's more of a Western Kansas, yeah. Southwest Kansas. And trust me, Dusty know all about it. It is flat out there. Although there's some really cool bluffs, and there are some valleys and stuff.
Well, yeah. And then the coolest part of that area, I think, is like Castle Rock, Monument Rocks, things like that you can actually visit and have fun at Mount Sunflower out there in the western part of the state. It's the highest point of elevation, but it's still flat.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Boys race starts 11:45 tomorrow morning in Goodland. Girls will run ahead of that at 11 o'clock. Jenna Baluch gives Beloit girls squad their best chance to qualify in state. She's had a good year for the Beloit Lady Trojan Cross Country squad. In Class 1A, all of our area teams will be at the Washington County Regional coming up tomorrow. Dusty, you kind of want to give an overview of the 1A, and then we'll hear from Coach Letourneau.
Yeah, 1A is on the girls' side, especially. Osborne's had a really good season, and they're being led this year by the likes of Maya Schweitzer, who was the MPL League champion, and Ryder Berticelli had a great race there at MPL. Kate Kendig's done a nice job this season for them. So Osborne, definitely a team that you can look at that could possibly have some success and maybe get a team placing here and qualify their entire team for state on the girls' side. Then on the boys' side, St. John's has obviously had a very good year. Osborne's Johnny Hamill was the MPL champion, so he's one to watch out for this weekend, as well as others from the Northern Plains League. But St. John's is the team we're looking at for the most part of having a chance to bring home a boys' trophy, and obviously their coach, Ben Letourneau, feels good about their chances.
Feeling pretty good with things that are coming up here. We're of course, we're familiar with. We do run there for the regular season invitational. We run regionals there several times over the years. It's a great course, and there's only a couple of teams that we haven't seen yet through the course of the season. I know especially our boys should do well there. They did get first at the Northern Plains League. They've been first, second, or third in most of the regular invitationals. And so far, we haven't lost to a 1A team, so we're looking forward to seeing how things go on Saturday.
Oh, don't jinx yourself. Don't say those things. No, they'll be all right. And we wish everybody luck at cross country and at sub-state volleyball coming up tomorrow. Anything else to mention?
No, Smith Center will be a great bend tomorrow in 2A regional cross country. So other than that, I think we got it covered for local sports. Again, ncksports.com, your home for everything local.
All right, college football. KU trying to snap a two-game slide, and I can guarantee you they're going to win. I've attended the last two games, and they've lost, and I'm not going to Waco coming up tomorrow. So KU's going to win at Baylor. Baylor. Nah, I don't know about that. KU's 5-2, 2-2 in the Big 12. Baylor 3-3, 1-2 in the Big 12. Baylor defending Big 12 champions. Lance Leipold on the Bears' offense. They can put up some points.
Coach Grimes, our offense coordinator, does such a great job of balancing what they do. Schematically sound. They do it and do it well. But the quarterback gives them a chance. You know, he's got that extra moxie you can kind of see about him that you can see a team rally around. Some of the speed and at the skill positions and holistically how they use it. Really liked how they use their tight end. So again, it's a complete offense that we're going to have to be ready for.
I like that word, holistically, throwing that out there. Big words. I like it.
I like it.
Yeah, not bad, Coach Leipold. Well done. KU at Baylor, 11 a.m. tomorrow. Pregame at 10:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. Baylor had a few extra days to prepare for this. They're at home. They lost on a Thursday to West Virginia. Could easily have won that game, 43-40. Their defense isn't all that, but it's not bad. Their offense is decent. And so I don't want to get caught up in, oh, my gosh, they scored something against West Virginia. Well, KU put up over 50 against West Virginia. So West Virginia defensively is not all that. But Baylor is a team that's better than the 1-2 record says in their conference. They lost a three-point game to West Virginia. They lost a tight game to Oklahoma State. They beat Iowa State early in the year by a touchdown. And I think that's what you got in the Big 12 is, oh, hey, this team, like Iowa State, they're on 0-4. And their four losses by combined 14 points. They're not as bad as the record indicates. And so there's not, I mean, Kansas 2-2, and Iowa State, if they didn't miss three field goals, would have won that game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, K-State is undefeated in the Big 12, and they lost to Tulane. Okay, and now Tulane is ranked. And the Horned Frogs, you know, they've looked pretty good this year, but they've had some close calls, obviously, the last couple of weeks. Shouldn't have won last week. Oklahoma State should have beat them when they were up 14, and they ended up going double overtime, TCU won. So there is no easy game, and KU's got to find one more. They need to find one more, just one, and they hope to have Daniels back in a few weeks against Oklahoma State. He was a limited participant in practice this week, so that's good news for KU fans. Jason Bean has played fairly well, but the defense has got to be better. I don't care who the quarterback is. If the defense can't get off the field, Oklahoma was 16-20 on third down last week against KU's defense. 700 yards of offense, and Oklahoma ran 100 plays. Listen, I don't care how good your defense is. When you have to defend 100 plays, you're not going to win.
You're going
to
break down.
You're going to break down. You're going to get tired. And there was a lot of missed tackling by Kansas. And part of that was breaking down and getting tired. And I go back to, and I talked with Brian Haney about this yesterday, the voice of the Jayhawks. You can catch that interview. You missed it on our podcast page, Sports Ticket, on the KDCountry94.com. Brian said the same thing. He agreed with me when I brought it up. I said, doesn't KU have to maybe run the ball a little bit more? It takes some pressure off of Jason Bean. But not only that, you give your defense more of a rest on the sideline, because I thought they'd run the ball more effectively and maybe more often against Oklahoma. Oklahoma fan next to me said, you're crazy. You just passed the ball against us. We suck with our pass defense. You don't even think about running the ball against us. Well, okay, KU kind of did that, and that didn't work.
You can make defenses look a heck of a lot better if you're on the field longer on offense.
Right.
Like K-State's classic example of that over the, in the past. Like, their defense really wasn't that good, but their numbers were excellent because they're only defending probably 50 plays a game instead of 100, right?
Yeah, the defense on the field for 24 minutes instead of 36 minutes. That's a big difference, you know, statistically. No doubt about it. So KU's defense has to be better, and I think they have to run the ball more efficiently and maybe more often. And Neal's not a back that can probably carry it 25, 30 times a game. That's part of the problem there, because he's really good, about 15 carries a game. And missing Highshaw is hurting them, because he was off to a great start and he's a very physical back. I think Morrison could be used a little bit more. Kai Thomas just doesn't seem to have a burst and isn't seeing holes and he's hesitating. And I would rather have Morrison run the ball right now than Kai Thomas. And I hate to say that. Kai's a Kansas kid from Topeka, but I'm sitting there watching Kai Thomas run the football this year, and I know he was hurt earlier in the year, and I'm sitting here and I'm going, he must have had the best offensive line in all of football last year to run for over 1,000 yards. He must have had gigantic holes to run through, which I can't believe, because the Big Ten isn't that easy. So I don't know if he's just not 100% or if he's not comfortable in the offense and reading the holes, but he just seems to hesitate, and by the time he hesitates, he doesn't have a burst to hit the hole anyway. You know, we know certain guys. I mean, Le'Veon Bell was good at that, waiting, hesitate, and then hit that hole. Kai Thomas hasn't been able to do that. And if he could, that would bring a different dimension to this offense, because Neal's not a guy that's going to be an everyday back.
No, he's not built to be that at all. So, yeah, I agree with that. And Kai Thomas is kind of built to be that if you need him to be that.
But he is.
It's just not working out for some reason.
Nope. So KU Baylor tomorrow, 10:30 pregame, Z96.3 The Lake, your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas. So that's a big game, but there's a bigger game in the Big 12, and it is tomorrow night. Primetime, 7 o'clock on FS1. It's a battle for first place in the Big 12. It's exactly what everybody predicted. K-State, 3-0 in the Big 12. TCU, 3-0 Big 12. TCU, number 8 in the country. K-State, 17th. Imagine if K-State beat Tulane. Oh, man, how much more hub this would get. But it is what it is. This is a big game, no doubt. And I think K-State's catching TCU at a very good time. TCU's coming off two highly emotional, hard-fought wins at KU, 38-31. And then last week, they should have lost. Oklahoma State, I thought, was a better team, but Oklahoma State always seems to have this game where every year in the Big 12, they should win, but they find a way to lose it. And TCU, to their credit, battled back, tied it, and it went to double overtime, and they won. And Max Duggan has played fantastic this year. Here's Chris Klieman, head coach of K-State, on TCU, their offense, and their quarterback, Max Duggan.
His ability to run the football, whether it's design runs, scrambles, has been a nightmare for teams, as well as, you know, spreading the ball. The receivers is playing at a really, really high level right now. The running back's playing at a high level. They're blocking up front really well. And then you mix in the amount of tempo that they're running. They're getting a lot of people misaligned and just throwing some easy smoke screens that are sometimes you'd think would be knocked down for 3 or 4, and they're getting 15, getting 18 yards, and then they're able to take and win on their shot plays. But I think it's a credit to where Duggan's at and how he's playing, because he's making them go.
Yeah, TCU is a solid team. They're not great defensively. They're very good offensively. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. And I think the biggest problem for K-State, actually, they're a team that's probably better equipped to handle TCU. K-State's defense has been very good this year, and that's get a pass rush. They get a pass rush, which they can do with Felix and Duke, there's no doubt, and others. Now you don't have as much time to throw it up to their stud receivers. They've got the Quentin Johnson kid's a stud. I saw him in person. Absolute stud. 6'4". I would think he'll play in the NFL. They got another receiver at 6'5". They're tall. They're physical. And if you give Duggan too much time, K-State's in trouble tomorrow night. But I think K-State, they have one of the better pass rushes in the league. They also have one of the better defenses in the league. And so I think K-State can match up against TCU. But the key to me in this game is getting pressure on Max Duggan. If you don't, he's going to just pick you apart, mm-hmm. and he's just going to throw it up for grabs to his 6'4", 6'5", wideouts. And nobody in this league has corners that can really go up against these guys on a consistent basis that TCU has at wideout. And Coach Klieman is well aware of the challenge TCU presents to his team tomorrow night.
The stakes keep getting higher, and we get a really good TCU team at their place. They're playing really well. Duggan's playing really, really well, playing with a lot of confidence. You can see how their defense has continued to grow in their new system that they're running, and they're playing with a lot of confidence. So it'll be a big challenge for us.
All right, how you see this shaping up, Dusty? I kind of like the, you know, K-State's had 2 weeks to get ready. TCU's had two emotional, hard-fought games. I know TCU's at home, but for some reason, I like K-State in this game.
Yeah, it's very tough for me because I understand that it's on the road and it's against what you said with some taller receivers and things like that TCU's going to bring to the table, and TCU's obviously on a high right now. If they can carry that over, then it could be dangerous. But I'm kind of with you. I feel like the energy that you expend to make that comeback against Oklahoma State last week, and then you get on that high, and now you're starting to think really, really good about mm-hmm. yourselves.
Top 10.
And, you know, shouldn't have won this game against Oklahoma State. They were undefeated. They were going to be maybe top 5 if they beat us. Who knows what would have happened, you know, in all the other rankings and things like that. But now they're feeling like, oh, hey, we're invincible. We just came back and beat a top 10 team here. And now we're top 10. And so you can get a lot of some of that stuff can slip into your mind a little bit too much. In K-State, like you said, typically – you're good off of a bye, and I think the biggest thing for K-State with the bye is getting healthy, right? And,
sure.
and having those guys, because it sounds like Khalid Duke will be playing too, and that's mm-hmm. a very, very important part of Huge. What you're talking about of getting to the quarterback, right? I like the depth on K-State's defensive line, but Duke and Anadika Uzama are the guys that need to be the ones that are going in there and putting that pressure on. I mean, they've got other guys that have the ability to do it, but we know they can cause a lot of havoc to an offensive line and to an entire offense. They can disrupt anything that other quarterback can do if their motor is going. And so that's what I like about that. And I do feel like they'll be able to get some pressure on Duggan and maybe, you know, condense the game a little bit for TCU's offense and give them less opportunities. So I'm going to pick K-State by a field goal in this, which is kind of rare. I don't usually do that in a game like this when they're on the road. But I really feel I like a lot of things they're doing, and I like this matchup a little bit for K-State as far as the athleticism that they can bring defensively and hopefully kind of slow TCU's great offense down a little bit.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one as well. So it should be a great game. Looking forward to it. FS1 tomorrow night. K-State ranked 17th, TCU 8th, and the winner will be still undefeated in the conference. And if TCU wins, they'll remain undefeated overall and maybe even move up higher in the polls. And Sonny Dykes, first year's head coach, they've already forgotten about Gary Patterson. I mean, no, Gary Patterson did a heck of a job at TCU.
Gary Patterson in burnt orange still looks really weird when I see him pitching.
When he does the hook'em sign, it's gross and grotesque is what it is. Big 12 games other than those. West Virginia travels Texas Tech at 2 o'clock. Number 11, Oklahoma State hosts number 20, Texas at 2:30 on ABC. That's an interesting game. Oklahoma fans hope that it ends in a tie. Oklahoma is not playing. So they had a great win over KU last week. Their defense still has a lot of work to do, but their offense looked pretty sharp with Gabriel back. They get a sit out this week. Nebraska sits out this week, so they'll lick their wounds after losing Purdue, and they'll get ready for a showdown against Illinois. This is still a very important game coming up next Saturday for the Huskers. Top 25, number 14, Syracuse at number 5, Clemson at 11 a.m. Number 9, UCLA heads to number 10, Oregon at 2:30. Number 6, Alabama hosts number 24, Mississippi State at 6 o'clock. So some of the marquee games in the top 25. MIAA, we should tell you that my Pittsburgh State Gorillas, and yes, they're my Gorillas because I went to school and graduated there, so don't even start with me. Pittsburgh State's ranked 5th in the country. We finally got some respect and moved up. And I would take on Missouri Western, and we'd probably lose and get upset because Missouri Western usually gives us their best shot. Pittsburgh State hosting Missouri Western. Washburn hosting Central Oklahoma. Central Missouri is at Fort Hays State in Hays. Northwest Missouri State hosts Northeastern State and Emporia State at Missouri Southern. And Jason wants to know about Nebraska Kearney. The Lopers are at Lincoln. Not Lincoln High School, Kansas, but Lincoln, Missouri in Jeff City.
Not Lincoln, Nebraska either.
Or no, not playing in Lincoln either. You're right about that. Glad we cleared that one up. As we mentioned, Thursday night football, the Cardinals beat the Saints 42-34 last night. The Chiefs back in action. They're 4-2 after the loss to the Bills on the road, taking on the 3-3 49ers in Santa Clara. And pull up the Chiefs injury report here, because when you get to this part of the season, you start looking at that injury report a little bit closer as to, okay, what key guys are out for what teams. And for the Chiefs, Mike Dan, a limited participant with a calf injury. Rashad Fenton has not practiced this week due to a hamstring, so he's probably not going to play on Sunday in San Francisco or Santa Clara. Joe Tooney, ankle, limited participant. Brian Cook, full participant. That's good. Get him back. He missed the last game concussion. Legarius Sneed's good with a knee. Harrison Butker, good, full participant with the ankle. Mecole Hardman, a heel, says he's good to go. Trey Smith, guard, pectoral problem, no problem. So the Chiefs, for the relatively are healthy. McDuffie, it sounds like he's going to be able to go this week. So the Chiefs will be about, and Willie Gay's back. So, right? Yeah, Willie's back this week, I believe. I think that's right.
I think he...
Is Willie back this week?
I believe.
I think he is.
Was it 6 games?
Yeah, no, wasn't it 4 games? He played in the first 2 games. I thought it was 4 games, wasn't it? I'm going to pull it up real quick. Willie Gay. Yep. Willie Gay's back. That's what I thought. 4 games. So he played the first 2, missed the last 4, and so he is back, and that will help the Chiefs' defense as well. 49ers have a lot of injuries to deal with. Their safety, who's really good, Hufanga, he's got a concussion, hasn't practiced all week. Charvarius Ward, former Chief, their best cover corner, so they can play some man. He has not practiced all week with a groin. Nick Bosa, an outstanding pass rusher. He's been a limited participant, so he might not be able to go. Trent Williams is expected back on the offensive line, but he's had an ankle injury. Don't know how effective he's going to be. And then they got offensive lineman Mike McGlinchey, a calf. He's a tackle, and he may not be able to go. So the Niners have tons of injuries, and they're 3-3. And right now, the Niners are 3-3. The Rams are 3-3. The Seahawks are 3-3. The Cardinals are 3-4. The Chiefs are 4-2. And the Chiefs have a bye week coming up. And Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, number 15, he is confident his team's going to be focused and ready to go coming Sunday afternoon.
Guys better be focused. I mean, after losing the game and then turning on the film and watching this opponent we're about to play, guys better be locked in, because if we don't play our best football, we're not going to win. So guys will be locked in and ready to go.
Now, I've been talking about this. Some other people have been talking about this, is that the Chiefs, you know, listen, you got an offensive line that's more prone to be able to run block. We thought the Chiefs would run the ball a little bit more this year, and at times they have, and against the Buccaneers they did, and they look great. And then people start wanting to blame the running backs. Well, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not hitting the holes, and we don't give the ball to McKinnon, and Pacheco only had two carries against the Bills, and that's all true, by the way. But Andy Reid still trusts his running backs. I just wonder when he's going to trust them enough to hand them the ball often.
Well, we've got to trust in all of them. And they've all got kind of their plays and times that we try to use them. It just depends on the game. So this game might be different than the last game. But we try to give them as close to equal opportunity as we can. I know Pacheco came up a little short this last game. He had 10 reps, I think it was.
Listen, I don't want to go off here, but when you play a game that is never a two-score game, you're never down by more than 4 points. And McKinnon and Pacheco combined for 4 carries. You either don't trust them, or you just forget to call runs. It's ridiculous to me. It is ridiculous to me because I'm hearing now people want to say that our running backs aren't good enough. That's crap, in my opinion, because they sure as hell were good enough against Tampa Bay, who has one of the best defenses in the league. Tampa Bay's got better linebackers than the Bills do. Tampa Bay's secondary is better than the Bills right now because the Bills are banged up in the secondary. Now, the Bills have the better pass rush because of one main guy who they just picked up this offseason called Von Miller, who's a Hall of Famer. And with a 3-man pass rush, they can still get to the quarterback. How can you not run the ball against a 3-man front? Because you don't.
Yeah.
And it's what happened the second half against the Bengals. All the talk about the Chiefs. So we got the Chiefs figured out now. We run. We don't give them the deep ball. We make them check it down. We got the two high safeties. Well, the Chiefs made the adjustment after starting 3-4 last year, right? That was the kryptonite. They adjusted. They won 9 out of the last 10. They end up getting home field for the AFC title game. And then the Bengals deploy a different strategy. You know what? I don't think Reed is willing to commit to the run. I don't think Mahomes is going to be patient enough. We're going to rush 3, drop 8, play some zone, and see if the Chiefs are willing to go 10 plays. But we're also willing to – we want to see if the Chiefs are willing to make 10 of those plays on that drive. 5 of them runs. We don't think they'll do it. And they didn't. And they're averaging 5 yards a pop. McKinnon was doing great. Okay, so we go through the first 5 games of the season. We really don't see – we see that from time to time, a little bit of 3-man rush. But the Bills in the second half against the Chiefs, what did they do? They predominantly went to a 3-man rush. And the Chiefs still couldn't protect Mahomes when it came crunch time at the very end. Von Miller still got to the quarterback. They rushed 3 on that final play that caused the interception. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying you run the ball every play with a minute 4, down 4, okay? With 2 timeouts. But you could run it once there. You still could have. You have your timeouts. Maybe get the big run. Now, I will say, we don't have running backs at Chiefs that are typically going to get, like Jamal Charles, it's going to get an 80-yard run. Okay, we don't have Kareem Hunt. We don't have backs quite that good. But we got good enough backs. And the reason I know this is because I've seen them average 5 yards in the game or 6 yards per carry. I've seen all 3 of them have success at different times. I've also seen all 3 of them they're capable of catching the ball out of the backfield, whether it's a screen or a swing pass. That when you're going against 3-man front, many times that swing pass is open. It's open because they're covering middle of the field and deep in the deep thirds in the back half of the field. So that's my frustration. And guess what? The 49ers just traded for a running back. The big news yesterday, the Carolina Panthers have agreed to trade star running back Christian McCaffrey to the Niners for multiple draft selections. The Panthers will get a 2023 second, third, and fourth round pick next year, plus a fifth rounder in 2024. And I think it's a great trade by the Panthers. Panthers are going nowhere. McCaffrey has missed 23 games since the start of the 2020 regular season, which coincides with his big contract that he got. And it goes back to what I say. You never give a running back a gigantic contract in the National Football League. You should never, ever do it again. It doesn't work. Larry Johnson didn't work. Todd Gurley blew up in their face and started to get hurt because of wear and tear. Ezekiel Elliott hasn't been the same guy since he got his contract. And obviously Christian McCaffrey was one that you felt a little bit better about. But he had lots of touches because he catches a lot and he runs it a lot and he's not exceptionally that super big. And now he's been traded to the Niners. Now, I don't know if he's going to play Sunday against the Chiefs, but it does throw a wrinkle into the Chiefs' defensive game planning a little bit if they have McCaffrey. But they're not going to be able to put in too much. But they do have Deebo Samuel and McCaffrey. If I'm the Chiefs, my concern is actually what they've been pretty good against this year, and that's the run. I'm concerned about the rush defense because of the matchup. Not overall rush defense, but in this matchup. Because the Niners do have Kittle. They've got some weapons. Ayuk has been pretty good recently. But that's where having Willie Gay back is really makes me feel a little bit better to defend the run. But I don't know if McCaffrey's even going to play. If he does, how much? I have no idea. But even without McCaffrey, the Niners are a team that can run it down your throat. They can keep Mahomes on the sideline. They got Debo Samuel, who's an amazing, amazing athlete. And if Garoppolo just doesn't make mistakes, there's no doubt the Niners are capable of knocking off the Chiefs because they are a physical football team. And the Chiefs have to go across the country and play on Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock pregame this Sunday on Z96.3 The Lake. I still think the Chiefs are going to win. I don't think they're going to lose two in a row. I think the injuries will be too much to overcome for the Niners.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. It is a matchup that you don't just, I hate these kind of games because going in, like you said, you got guys, you got a team that control the line of scrimmage and can run, and the Chiefs have had issues stopping that. And but I know Willie Gay's back and that as well, but I just don't – not a fan of these kind of matchups, and I'm not a fan of these kind of games, to be honest with you. I think it'll probably be a lower scoring game than the Chiefs are going to want, but I'll say like 27-24 Chiefs, something like that.
Over-under is 48.5, so that bodes to 27-21, 27-24, somewhere in the range that you have, yeah. So I like the Chiefs to win too.
I do too if they get out to a good start. If they fall behind, 49ers are going to run the football, shorten the game. Maybe the Chiefs don't perform in the red zone and have to kick a couple field goals, and all of a sudden you're stuck midway through the fourth quarter in a tight ball game. So hopefully the Chiefs get out to a good start and are focused, like Patrick Mahomes said.
I get where you're coming from on the good start thing, but that only applies to 31 of the teams in the league. The Chiefs don't have to get off to a good start. They were down 17-0 to the Raiders. Yeah. They were down. Mahomes has an amazing percentage compared to every quarterback went down by double digits in playoff games, regular season games. So, and this defense is not one where you have to hold serve. This defense can get some stops. You know, the 18 team, that was the one where Mahomes had to score every time to keep up because the defense could never stop anybody. So I'll disagree with you a little bit, but I understand why you say it, because any normal team, yeah, you can't have a be down 14-0 because this team's going to shorten the game, and that still could be effective for the Niners. But if the Chiefs are down 14-0 in the first quarter, I'm not sweating any bullets.
No.
If I had Alex Smith, I would be.
Oh, 100%.
It's just against the 49ers, it's a little different. They can run the football.
Sure.
If Bosa plays, they can rush the passer a little bit. So those are the types of teams you'd rather get off to a good start, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I agree with you on that, no doubt. All right, Chiefs-Niners on Sunday. Other NFL games this weekend that we'll tell you about. Here's the schedule. Browns are at the Ravens. The Buccaneers are at the Panthers, Falcons at the Bengals, the Lions are at the Cowboys, the Giants are at the Jaguars, Colts on the road at the Titans, Packers at the Commanders, the Broncos host the Jets. Hey, finally not prime time for the Broncos, thank God. Russell Wilson, they said Brett Rippon's taking some first string reps, so Russell Wilson, don't know about his status, and some Bronco fans will be like, hey, he can sit one or two or four or the rest of the season out the way he's playing. Texans are at the Raiders. The Raiders are 1-4, but they have a very favorable schedule the next 6 weeks. Seahawks are at the Chargers. Of course, the Chiefs at the Niners, 325. And then the Steelers at the Dolphins, the Sunday night game. And the Monday night game is not that attractive. The Bears at the Patriots. But the story there is Bill Belichick can get the record for most wins by NFL coach in NFL history. He's tied with George Halas right now with 324 wins. And I would say he'll probably get it against the Bears coming up on Monday night.
I would say so.
Yes.
Major League Baseball playoffs. Yesterday, you had the ALCS game two. This was the big hit.
He's got two on at the corners here in the third. And Bregman sends one deep to left. It is back and it is gone. A three-run poke. Alex Bregman puts the Stros on the board in the third inning.
3-0 Stros at that point. They held on to win 3-2. Yankees just not really doing much offensively, and the Astros pitching is outstanding. And the series shifts to New York with Game 3 at 4:07 tomorrow afternoon. Yankees do have Cole and Cortez lined up for the next couple of games, so there's certainly an opportunity for the Yankees. But the Astros certainly seem to be the deeper pitching staff, with the bullpen as well being very, very good. Presley was great the first two games of this series, and they've had some high-leverage situations with their relievers they've come through as well, the Astros. And to me, in this series, this is simple. And I actually am enjoying watching this a little bit, and I don't like either team. I hope they both just do nothing. But I love seeing a team getting punished for only trying to hit a home run. That's what the Yankees do. The Yankees are swinging for home runs. They strike out freaking all the time. I mean, this is why I picked the Astros. This is why most people pick. Todd, even, he's a Yankee fan. He said Astros earlier in the year because of their pitching. Because great pitching beats great hitting almost every time. Great pitching beats great hitting. Okay? But one of the things you can do against great pitchers is like the Royals did in the ninth inning against Matt Harvey. Put the ball in play! There was a one hard hit ball in that ninth inning, and the Royals tied the game and went on to win the game in extra innings and won the World Series.
You gotta put pressure on.
You gotta put pressure on the defense. Dear Lord. 17 strikeouts in game one. What was it, 11 or 12 last night? Actually, more than that. I think it was 11, and they were still swinging and struck. And Presley struck out the side in the ninth last night. I mean, the Yankees don't even put the ball in play in critical situations in the ninth. Giancarlo Stanton has a 3-1 count and looks at a fastball for strike three. Like, I thought you were supposed to swing. So, I actually enjoy watching teams being punished. And it's not just the Yankees. It's almost everybody in baseball. I mean, the Astros yesterday, they only got 3 runs off of 1 swing of the bat. They didn't do anything offensively the rest of the game. The Yankees' pitching's actually been very good. Timely hitting is what the Astros have had. Mm-hmm. But when you keep swinging for the fences, it's feast or famine. And right now, it's a drought. It's desert, scorched earth, and I think you deserve it if you're going to try to swing and hit the ball out of the park on every single swing. Shorten up, put the ball in play. God forbid there's a shift, yet try to hit it the other way. And I know sometimes that's how the pitcher pitches you, and he don't allow you to really go there. But at least put the ball in play. These are the greatest hitters in the world, and you're telling me they can't put the ball in play? Andrew Benintendi, give you a quick story here. Andrew Benintendi, with the Red Sox, he came up. He was not a home run hitter, okay? He could hit home runs. He's more of a doubles hitter, gap hitter. Comes with the Red Sox. He is runner-up for American League Rookie of the Year. He's part of the Red Sox team that wins the World Series, all right? Then the Red Sox try to get him to become a, wait for it, home run hitter. He starts to have more of a loop in his swing. He suddenly really, really struggles. He struggles so much that the Red Sox, at the age of 26, give up on Andrew Benintendi. They trade him to the Royals for a bunch of scrubs that aren't doing anything for the Red Sox. And Benintendi becomes an all-star with the Royals. You know why? Because he went back to the way he used to swing the bat, and the Royals were okay with that. They're like, we're in a bigger park. You don't need to be swinging. You're not a 40 or 30 home run guy anyway. Hit the ball in the gaps, put it in play. And how many times did I see Benintendi hit opposite field hits for the Royals in a year and a half that he was with the team? And he hit doubles in the gaps. And he did not hit a lot of homers. He had a good average, but he got on base. He didn't strike out a lot. That's what the Yankees need right now. The problem is Benintendi's on the bench. He's hurt. He can't play. That's why they got Benintendi. And that's a great example of a guy that's career got messed up because you're teaching the guy to hit home runs or bust. And then he refigured it out. But now he's with the Yankees. He might go south again if they want him to keep hitting, try to hit home runs. So Benintendi is a great example. And Ryan Lefevre, the voice of the Royals, we had him on. He talked about that this year. And he said that's one thing that hitters have a heck of a time adjusting to. They have been taught to go for the long ball. Well, at some point, you got to adjust and go back to putting the ball in play. And he said, it takes a lot of time. It took Andrew Benintendi a full season to make that adjustment. Mm-hmm. And that's what's wrong with the Yankees. It's what's wrong with a lot of baseball teams. It's part of the reason why some people get, a lot of times people say baseball's boring. Their stolen bases aren't what they once were. People don't run the bases as much. We don't see as much bunting, strategic, especially now that we have a DH in both leagues. We don't see the pitcher. And I know you don't want the pitcher to hit. But at least you had to make strategy. Double switch. The lineup changes. The pitcher's hitting fifth. You got to get a guy in. His job is to bunt the guy over. I mean, at least there's some strategy, right? But now it's DH is both leagues. We got 9 guys. We're all trying to hit home runs. Even the little guys are trying to hit home runs. And I'm sorry, but not everybody's Jose Altuve.
No.
Who looks like a trash can,
right,
from what Dodgers fans had said. So I just think it's time baseball. And I think that you need to start teaching this. And you need to work with your hitters. And you got to say, listen, we can't do this feast and famine stuff. When you have 42 strikeouts in a baseball game, which happened recently last weekend, 18 in a game, I know, but 42% of the outs are strikeouts, and that there's other games that's higher than that. That is boring as heck. And all we're doing now is waiting for a guy to hit a home run, and that's the difference in the game. That's it. We're not waiting for a, hey, we got runners at first and second. We need a timely base hit. We're not seeing, hey, let's have a runner at first and do a hit and run and go from first to third. Now we have first and third because that opens up a hole because we did a hit and run. No, no, no. We don't steal as often because we don't get thrown out at second because we're waiting for the guy to hit a home run. And then he strikes out. Like, I have no idea why the Yankees weren't trying to steal the base as soon as they got their guy in the game last night, especially on an 0-1 count. You know Presley throws breaking balls, and they wait till it's 0-2 to send him, or he chooses to go. Your job is to steal the base. If you get thrown out, at least you tried, instead of this, I'm hoping we hit a home run. So, it's tough to watch.
There's nothing good about 17 innings of baseball without runs being scored.
No.
And then a solo homer is the only run you get.
No, not at all. You're like in a slumber by that time. Phillies and Padres game three of the NLCS tonight. At least there were lots of runs the last time they played, although there were lots of home runs. Series tied 1-1, 6:37 tonight on FS1 in Philadelphia. And we close with this. Wichita head coach Eric Wedge is stepping away from the baseball program at Wichita State. Of course, he's an alum, and he played on that 89 team that won the College World Series. He's got some health issues, as they describe it. And I'll leave it there, okay? It's not what you may think. I'll just put it that way, okay? And so Wichita State athletic director said that they're going to have an interim coach take over Wedge's head coaching responsibilities at Wichita State with the baseball program, and there have not been any decisions made about the long-term leadership of the program at this time. So it's just a leave of absence, in essence, for Eric Wedge at this point in time. If he can get some things cleaned up in his life off the field, perhaps he'll be right back there managing the team, whether it's the beginning of the college baseball season or maybe he won't. I don't know, but that's big news there in Wichita today.
Yeah. Personal health issues, got to get them figured out and get yourself back in there and do the right thing.
Absolutely.
When you get back in there.
Absolutely. All right, schedule tonight.
Yes, Football Express 540 on Katy Country 94, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable. And then we have football on Katy Country 94, Rock Hills at Washington County. Pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock on Z96.3 through the lake. Same times, we'll have Pike Valley at Lakeside. And then online video stream at ncksports.com. Beloit is at TMP Marion tonight, 6:45 start. And then we'll have 10:05, the local high school football scoreboard show, presented by State Farm Insurance and Beloit and Osborne here on Katy Country 94.
Best of luck to Substate Volleyball teams, regional cross-country tomorrow. Once again, live video stream of Beloit at the Substate in Minneapolis tomorrow, beginning at 2 o'clock at ncksports.com. Be a Beloit Chidden channel.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.